This is CICK News. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Each week, we provide an update about events and issues developing right across Northwest BC. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com or subscribe to our podcast. CICK News broadcasts from unceded Ginamden Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Today on CICK News, we speak with independent ecologist Karen Price about some confusion and misrepresentation of recommendations she and her colleagues made to the provincial government last year regarding old growth deferrals in the province. That recently came up at a Committee of the Whole meeting with Smithers Council last week, where forestry industry representatives were seeking a letter of support in opposition to those old growth deferrals. We'll hear from Price and why it's important to clear the air on what is actually happening with those deferral recommendations. We'll also hear from Skeena Buckley Valley MP Taylor Bacharach about his party's new deal with the governing Liberal Party. We'll talk about affordability in housing, two issues which seem to elude successive and current governments, especially at a time when everything from mortgages to bananas are getting more expensive. Stay with us.
My name is Karen Price, and I am overlooking the mountain from our house on the backside of Malco.
Great. Karen, thanks so much for being with us today. I wanted to chat with you today because obviously we've heard a little bit of some confusion that came out of a Committee of the Whole meeting that happened last week with Smithers Council. There were a number of forestry industry people that wanted to see a letter of support coming from council, and they had you speak as well to talk to some of these deferrals that was recommended by the panel that you were on. But there was some possibly miscommunication and some misinformation that was thrown out during the meeting. Maybe let's chat a little bit about, firstly, some of what you heard and what you said and some of the things that you wanted to clear up. So what is going on with the deferrals at this moment?
So at the moment, the province has put out some maps and recommendations for areas of at-risk old growth for as potential deferral sites. This is where we would pause harvest for a short period, 2, 3, 4 years, to give us time for regional planning so that there can be collaborative planning with nations and communities to decide which areas should become protected, which areas should not, and how should we harvest the rest. So that's where we are. These recommendations have gone out to the province. Currently, areas that are within BCTS's tenure are being deferred. The rest of the province, there are very few actual deferrals. The province is undertaking a full consultation process with First Nations so that the deferral maps go to each nation. And then nations decide whether they would like to approve the deferrals or not approve the deferrals or a portion of them or work further with government on some other process. So that's where we are right now. There are a handful of deferrals. There's a large area in BCTS and the rest of the province. The deferrals have not yet been implemented, and that includes the Balkly.
Yeah. So majority of the operations that take place here in the valley, outside of Smithers, mostly PIR operations, others as well, Houston area, all of that is currently most of the tenures and timber that is out there is the same as it was yesterday. It's the same today. So nothing has really been touched in our area.
True, apart from BCTS tenures. And I can't
yeah.
speak to which those are in this area.
Yeah. Okay. One of the other things that seemed to have come up at the meeting was that they wanted, or you clearly had to explain that some of the misinformation that is currently out there, that you guys are affiliated with, big environmental groups is not true, that you guys are independent. And this is research that wasn't done just hastily, but this is stuff that you've been working on for years and decades. So maybe tell me a little bit about what you wanted to make sure that people understood about you and your colleagues that are working to identify some of this last old growth that should be protected?
Okay, so first I want to say our job wasn't to come up with areas that should be protected. That's the job of regional planning and First Nations. So the province hired us because of our expertise in BC's old growth and assessment to help them identify where the at-risk forests are. And these are as defined by Al Golley and Gary Merkel in the Old Growth Strategic Review. They defined at-risk forests that we should maintain because otherwise we're going to run out of options for planning. And so our job was a technical one. We were there as a technical team of scientists.
Yeah.
And all we had to do was to map the criteria defined by Al and Gary. So Al and Gary said that we should defer harvest in remnant forests where there's less than 10% old growth left today. In ancient forests, so these are the really old ones, thousands of years on the coast, hundreds of years in this area. And the big tree forests, so the large forests that provide special value in terms of being carbon banks and biodiversity hubs. And these are the large tree forests that have been targeted by harvest. So they not only are naturally rare in the landscape, think about valley bottoms, not everywhere is a valley bottom, but they've been made incredibly rare through harvesting. So those criteria already existed in Al and Gary's report, and we simply operationalized it by figuring out how we could map those areas, gave that map to government, and then government used those as the recommended deferral areas. So what we did was a technical task. We didn't decide what should be mapped. We just decided how to map it.
So you just took the information and, as you say, operationalized it so that you could identify and know where these places were. Clearly, you know, you guys are not the ones that are driving this process, but you're using your expertise and your knowledge and your history to help understand where these places are and what is of the highest value in terms of the old growth. One of the other things that came up was the issue of having some sort of consultation. Now, you had mentioned that there had been some consultation done and the consultation is ongoing, obviously, because these deferrals still haven't been directed or they haven't been initiated just with the BCTF. So the consultation is ongoing. Maybe you can kind of clear that you know, miscommunication up as well.
Yes, well, I was a little bit shocked to see an article in the Interior News that said that I had spoken to consultation because I had not. My presentation was about how we did the deferrals and addressing some of the concerns that have been raised by various folks, some of them quite valid and some of them based on extreme misinformation. The only way that I spoke about consultation was that in Al and Gary's report, the Old Growth Strategic Review, that was the basis for all of the recommendations government's working through on old growth at the moment, they had a massive input from thousands of people all around the province. They traveled around. They had surveys and letters and interviews with hundreds of people, thousands of people in a written format. And those folks came to a surprising consensus that we need to change the way that we manage old growth. So definitely there were a lot of voices that came in at that point, and I mentioned that. And then the recommendation to defer harvest was simply one of their 14 recommendations, and that's the one we were working on. And as I say, what we did was simply operationalize the recommendation for deferral by mapping it. So there was no consultation in the mapping because it was an expert process. And now that the recommendations have come out as recommended areas, then now we go to another consultation process. And this one is a formal consultation with nations, first of all, and then there will also be consultation elsewhere. And ultimately, we move way beyond consultation into regional planning. And that's where we have to go because we're not going to achieve change and the paradigm shift that we need to move from managing for timber with constraints to managing for ecosystem health, which is where we need to get if we're going to have any hope of addressing our climate and biodiversity crises. We need to get to that paradigm shift, and the only way we can get there is with land use planning. So the important point is that deferrals are simply a pause so that we can take a breath and we can go, okay, there's still some old growth left that we can plan with. And if we don't do the deferrals, we risk losing those forests. So that's one thing. Another thing that I'd like to say is, I'm not sure it's misinformation. The government recommended deferrals in 2.6 million hectares. And that sounds like a super big area, and it is. But first of all, only half of that, so 1.3 million hectares, overlaps with the timber harvesting land base. So we don't have to worry about the rest. There's not going to be a deferral in there because nobody wants to harvest it. And then really the areas that are going to have deferrals are only the areas where there's already planned and permitted cut blocks. And so of those 2.6 million hectares, there's only about 50,000 hectares, so a really tiny area that actually overlaps with planned and permitted cut blocks. This is over the whole of the province. Those are the areas that would actually be deferred. So people are concerned about this massive area, and, you know, rightly so. It's a bit scary, the idea that there'd be 2.6 million hectares that all of a sudden people are thinking will be protected. But A, it's not getting protected, and B, it's not that big area. It's only 50,000 hectares, which is still a decent area. But, you know, you spread that out across the province and think about that, really, if apart from small area-based tenures, woodlots and community forests may have some short-term impacts, but the majors can move somewhere where it's not deferred. I mean, yes, there's a timing issue, and yes, it takes some time to come up with a new block, but essentially the impacts of deferrals are short-term, and really they're not going to be big, if any. In most places, companies will be able to just shift their operations outside of the recommended areas.
I guess the other thing, obviously, at the meeting, you know, there were some alarm bells ringing from industry, you know, PIR, but there was also the Community Resources Board kind of came into the conversation as well. Now, you have an intimate knowledge of the Community Resources Board. You mentioned that you used to chair the Community Resources Board. Maybe tell me a little bit about that and how that plays into some of this, the role that they play in making sure that community resources are looked after, and also that there's planning that goes into this.
Sure. So the Community Resources Board originally convened to develop the Land and Resources Management Plan in the 90s. Now, at that time, First Nations were not involved in planning. And so we have a land and resource management plan that was created without First Nations involvement. However, that said, this land and management plan at the time was it was a good plan in terms of dealing with regional concerns beyond First Nations. And it's been more or less followed since then. It's 25 years old, and it doesn't include any consideration of climate change, so can't consider any of the value of, let's say, old growth or productive forest for carbon stewardship. The science has changed since then. The numbers, the targets for how much forest we should maintain for biodiversity in the LRMP, the Land and Resource Management Plan, are far below anything that science says will be helpful. So we're putting biodiversity at high risk. We're putting fish at high risk. We're already seeing siltation of streams. We're seeing moose disappearing. We are seeing goshawks disappearing. There are impacts of the caribou, of course. I don't really even need to mention. Everyone knows about caribou. But there are so many impacts that we're actually seeing in our area. And this is in part climate change, and it's in part because our areas that we're maintaining are too small. Our landscape is crisscrossed with roads. And so the management plan that was developed in the 90s, is the strategies that are in there are not achieving the values. Now, the values when I sat on the community resource board, we did some surveys and figured out what are people's values in the valley. And the values haven't changed. People still want the same thing. People live here for a reason. And they want to be able to go outside. They want to be able to enjoy forests, outdoor recreation activities. They want to be able to have subsistence food. They want to be able to have clean water. So the values haven't changed. But what the existing plan is not achieving the values. So we need a new plan, and that's exactly where the government is heading. This time, the plan would be collaborative with First Nations. The plan would include climate change, and we hope the plan would include some of the new science that tells us that if we have less than 30% of any ecosystem retained, then we are putting ecosystem health at high risk. So the Community Resources Board, their job for the last 25 years has been to monitor the Land and Resources Management Plan. And they've been doing that and, you know, working valiantly. They're one of the last of these monitoring committees in the province. And I think that they can play a huge role in moving forward with the next set of planning. They have some experience, they have expertise, they represent a whole suite of values. Now, it's unfortunate that the Interior News spoke, Matt Sear spoke at the council meeting, and Matt is the current chair of the Community Resources Board, but he was not speaking for the Community Resources Board, he was speaking for industry. And so it's unfortunate that the Interior News kind of implies that this is the perspective of the Community Resources Board, because it's not. They have not, as far as I know, they certainly didn't present their perspective at this meeting, because their perspective would include all values. So I'm hoping that they will be putting together something to submit to council with their values, but they haven't to date. So that was disappointing that that the newspaper claimed or implied that the Community Resources Board had been, I forget what the words were, I don't know if it was a torpedo or blindsided or something. Matt never said that. He was speaking from industry, and, you know, I have no problem with Matt speaking for industry. I think that he might be a little, he might feel a little upset that his comments are potentially misunderstood, because I know that he definitely wouldn't intend that. I know Matt, and I know that he wouldn't say that.
Yeah, and we're going to try to speak to Matt as well to clear this up. I guess at the end of the day, you know, with everything said, if there are forestry industry people out there that do have concerns about this or are worried about what's going to happen, you know, what would you say to those folks at this point?
Well, uncertainty is always challenging. I mean, we're all facing an uncertain world at the moment. I think it would be a shock if anybody was not feeling some uncertainty and trepidation and even fear. I mean, I know I am. So I think that concern is always warranted right now. We are, you know, I don't want to say we live in uncertain times, but yeah, we do. What I would say to people is that in forestry, we have known for 50 years that we were going to hit a timber supply fall down right around now. And successive governments have done nothing to plan for it. And instead, you know, they've kept on cutting the same amount. And in areas next to the bulk, they increased the cut to deal with the beetles. So we're now getting to the point where we're running out of timber. All of the easy to harvest sites have been productive forests, so now we're moving further and further away from the mills, so it's more costly to get wood. We've known this. So that's one thing that it's not deferrals that are taking away the timber, it's because we have over-harvested for the last several decades. At the same time, the major companies they're recognizing that BC is going to be running out of old growth fairly soon, as was planned. And they are investing outside of the province rather than investing in BC. So we have there's a source of job loss that's going to be happening. And that is incredibly worrying. And that's part of why we need to change how we do forestry. We need to to do this movement from volume to value. We know we can do it because in the past we employed more people per cubic meter of wood than we do now. In the last 30 years, jobs have decreased considerably in the forest sector. And it turns out that the loss of jobs, it's not because we've lost area. It's not because areas have been protected. It's not because of environmentalists, because the area and volume harvested have remained fairly constant. It's because we have increased efficiency of harvest and increased mechanization, at first in the field and then in the mill. So we've lost thousands of jobs due to increased efficiency. If we changed our model and went to more partial cutting, then we would actually be able to bring up our number of jobs per meter so that we could still employ people and do things more carefully and in a way that looks after the health of the land better. So, I mean, I can't say that there's going to be no loss of jobs because I think there's been we've been planning, government has planned for a loss of jobs for 50 years. And we're essentially hitting that cliff where we're jumping off the cliff where we're running out of timber supply, as was planned. And I can say that deferrals are a tiny drop in that bucket, if that. And if we continue on to the paradigm shift that everybody agrees we need, that is one way that we can climb out of this hole potentially with a different forest industry. It won't be the same. It won't be run by super efficient major companies. It'll be one that is run more locally, that deals with the landscapes as appropriate for a region and for the people in that region.
Karen, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, and I think you kind of laid it out there quite well. So thank you so much for your insight and sharing a bit of your story. Obviously, this issue is not going away anytime soon, and I'm sure this isn't the last time that we're going to speak about it. But for now, we'll leave it there, and thank you so much for your time.
Okay, thanks, Ben.
Although we weren't able to reach him before broadcast deadline, we are looking to speak with Matt Sear to shed some light on how the forestry sector views the old growth deferral recommendations. Sear is a manager at the PIR Sawmill in Smithers. He also chairs the Community Resources Board and spoke at the Committee of the Whole meeting about the possible impacts and uncertainty within the forestry industry following the Government of BC's announcement last year regarding 2.6 million hectares of old growth deferrals. Coming up next, we'll hear from Skeena-Buckley Valley MP Taylor Bacharach about the federal NDP's recently signed deal to help keep the governing Liberal Party in power until 2025. The next time we'll probably be headed to the polls for a federal election. On a recent media scrum call with MP Bacharach, he praised the new deal. However, there are still questions about how the plan will be rolled out and who will benefit the most. The agreement between the Liberals and NDP included a national dental care plan, another approach to reconciliation, and of course, housing and affordability, among other issues. Although it all sounds good at this point, it remains to be seen how it will help all Canadians. During the scrum, I had a chance to speak with Bacharach about the issue of affordability and housing, an issue that continues to see a rising cost of living and housing, especially in rural parts of the country like Northwest BC. Here is our exchange.
I guess there's obviously a few things in here that are questionable, and one of them that kind of stood out to me was the housing and affordability. I know you just mentioned that, especially on reserve and Indigenous communities, housing is, you know, of a critical importance, and a lot of it needs to be replaced, even the housing that they have now, never mind new housing. But it seems that affordability and housing across the board has become an issue, especially in the last couple of years. We've seen massive increases in housing costs, especially for first-time home buyers, and in a lot of communities, especially here in the north, we just don't have the housing stock. So is there anything included in this plan? I know there is part of this Home Buyers Bill of Rights that are going to be implemented by the end of 2023, $500 one-time top-up to Canadian housing benefit, but that seems a little bit of a drop in the bucket considering that we're approaching a national average house price about $800,000. So what is included in this plan? What has the NDP signed up to help the affordability factor for all Canadians, especially in rural communities, which are we're seeing massive increases in our housing costs?
Yeah, great question, Dan. I'm looking at the agreement right now, and you know, under the section entitled Making Life More Affordable for People, the vast majority of the items in that section are focused on housing affordability. For people living with homelessness, for renters, and for people looking to buy a home. So right across the housing spectrum in the Northwest, and it's no different in any other part of Canada, people are struggling to find housing. So this agreement does address those things. I don't know if you want me to go through the brass tacks, but the Rapid Housing Initiative is going to be extended under this agreement for an additional year. That's a really important initiative focused on people who are struggling with homelessness. Refocusing the Rental Construction and Financing Initiative to focus on affordable units. I know in communities across the Northwest, the availability of affordable rental housing is really challenging. We have gone through a period of of economic growth and prosperity for a lot of folks, and that's resulted in the construction of new homes for purchase. But when it comes to rental housing, there is incredibly scarce supply, and the vacancy rate is extremely low in Northwest communities. So that's a piece that hopefully will improve that situation. There's a housing accelerator fund that we're going to move forward on launching in partnership, and implementing a home buyer's bill of rights to tackle the financialization of the housing market. So those are a few of the things that are in the agreement. I agree, this housing is a huge issue. It's something we've been talking about and trying to get traction on for a long time. And unfortunately, we continue to see housing prices shoot upwards. So hopefully with this agreement, we'll see accelerated efforts and we'll see some real progress for people on the ground.
I guess just a quick follow-up on that, because we have short time, but there are so many other questions on many of these different issues. But in terms of the housing, I'll just stick on that. Obviously, you know, we've seen the Liberals in power for, you know, a few years now. They continue to talk about this idea of making housing more affordable, but we've seen very little movement on that, especially here in the Northwest and other rural communities. What possess the NDP to agree to this? And also, are there any provisions within this agreement that if there isn't movement to lower the affordability of housing in Canada, will the NDP be able to challenge that and the Liberals at any point between now and the next 3 years?
Absolutely. We're still an opposition party and we're going to hold the government to account. We're going to continue to ask the hard questions. And as the Member of Parliament for Skeena-Bauku Valley, I'm going to be bringing forward the stories and the voices from our region so that the government understands the seriousness of this issue for people on the ground. Now, the initiatives that are in this agreement are not the only initiatives that are going to be pursued over the coming years when it comes to housing. We're going to also be bringing forward ideas from communities, and we're going to be pushing for more housing to be built, pushing for different models of housing, pushing for all sorts of strategies that lead to better affordability. I will say that this is a very difficult and important policy area to work on. For so many people, their house is their biggest investment. And we've seen over time, we've seen the financialization of the housing sector, where housing has become a financial commodity, where we see speculation and we see some behaviors in the housing market that are not conducive to affordable prices. So we need a concerted policy push. I think that the items in this agreement move us forward. It's not the be-all and end-all, and there's more work we're going to have to do, absolutely.
You've been listening to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at theskeena.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.